then shall we say, is the law sin? Might it never be. On the contrary, I would not have come to know the sin nature except through law. For I would not have known about coveting if the law had not said, you shall not covet. Sin nature became alive, unalive, or very intimate and near me. Did that which is good become a cause of death for me? May it never be. Rather, it was the sin nature, in order that it might be shown to be sin by affecting my death through that which is good. So that through the commandment, the sin nature would become utterly sinful. Flavor where we're going with this. I it's kind of like a multiple personality disorder, except it's a multiple personality reorder for the believer, you know, realizing and coming to acquaint himself with the two net natures that struggle within. So when we look at the text here, again, how do we understand the flow of it? We look for the flags. Flags are that's in Greek. Hang on. Okay. I just wanted to show you. You know, that's what I'm looking for, the Greek flags when I go to the text. And then when I see those and I look back at my English, I can flag it for you. There's a therefore. There's a rather, in order that, so that. There's a for. There's another that and a but. These kind, of course, are coordinated conjunctions between equal things. The other ones are logical more. But those are the kind of flags you're looking for in the text all the time to keep yourself pointed to where the author is driving the thought. So we have a summary statement. We have this big therefore that either accumulates what's in past or sets you up for what's following. It might do a little of both, and you have to kind of be sensitive to what's going on with the flow. Probably in this case, it's accumulating what we've done in the last 7 verses, 5 verses, 6 verses, and use that as a jumping off point. Then there's a couple of sub points, and then kind of a final explanation as well. So that would be the way we would lay out an outline if we did that. Let's take the first clause there in verse 14. Therefore, did that which is good become a cause of death for me? Take a few things. The therefore flag is there, so we want to know that builds from the previous context. They're not going to just pull these verses out. They're actually building on this law discussion we had in the last 6 verses. And he's saying, with that understanding in your mind now of what we've just talked about, let's take it a little bit farther. And now let's look at our subjects here. First one, this verse is very messy going back and forth, so just kind of, that's why I laid it out, subject, verb, that time, this thing, this time, it's messy. It says, therefore, did that which is good become a cause of death for me? And a cause is in italics in my numeric standard, so likely not there. But the subject is the good thing. They put it in that which is good, but the Greek just says the good thing. Agathos. Truly good or inner good. And it's the same word that we had back in 12 describing the law. The law is good, righteous, and holy. So that's a reference back to the law that he was just referring to in 12. So, very simple subject, but the way they translated it leaves it difficult to see what's being said here, or more difficult. Okay, now the main verb, become, and of course that's genomai, that means a change from what it was to what it is, and this is going to be in a question format, but that's the verb. So, if you made a question out of this, a declarative sentence would be, the good thing became, F we're on is one of the articles, so I think a capital S over the top of that one. The last one in verse 13 is also a capital F. And the last one in 14 is also a capital F. And nothing inspired, it just gives you a little hint. Hey, there's an article there. Paul's being very specific and particular when it comes to that word sin there. And so it makes a little bit of difference how we can read that. Was it the law that caused death in me? No, rather, it was the sin nature. And then there's no verb. He just gives you the noun and says that's it. Of course, it's logically, in order to contain his flow, we're knowing it's a contrast, so we fill in the rest of it. So even though what comes after rather in the Greek text is just the noun, the sin nature, and there is no was there. Apply what came before, because he's contrasting the 2 points. You imply a repeat. So you said in the first part, therefore, was it the good thing that was the cause that became a cause of death for me? No. Rather, it was the sin nature that became a cause of death for me. You know, it's kind of opposite there. It's kind of startling when you're reading along the Greek and you're expecting all this verbiage, you know, you're looking for nouns and participles and adverbs. All of a sudden he goes, Allah. I'm a harmatia. There's the signature. He just stops at that point. Right? It's kind of like a bam. There it is. What was not there? No. You're going to have to supply a verb. You're going to no. No tense. No tense. You're going to have to supply what is he meaning there. And he's meaning to imply it's the opposite of what I just said before. So you'd supply whatever came in the first half. Became to me death. So the sin nature became death to me, only provided separation between me and God. Okay, next part of this is either it's applied with henna. We've heard that word before. Henna either means purpose or result. That's a very close idea when you're looking at meaning, but I think this one's probably. Result in this particular case. Take it apart again, the flag is henna. Looking at the subject of this clause, we have the word sin without an article. So he used an article the first time, not using an article here, uses an article later. This is not stylistic, he's trying to get across the point. Subtle to us as it might be, we know that when we don't have an article, he's emphasizing a character or nature or characteristics, the kindness of it, you know, the sin character of a thing. How's that? So, with the result that the sin character, is being shown or being illuminated, the translation they made in the New American Standard is to show, is actually a word that means to shine on something, to illuminate it. They know. So we're after the in order of that, right in the middle of 13. So the sin nature is making my death, if you will, or separation, and it has the result of sin being illuminated. Sin that the sin nature produces is being illuminated upon by means of the law, or the good thing again. So the law is marking out sin, if you will. It's showing you where the boundaries of sin are. Earlier, you know, we had in Romans 5 where it says, even though there was death in the world, before the law came, for until the law, sin was in the world, but sin was not counted where there's no law. There was no way to mark it out and say, well, this is a sin, this is a sin. There was sin, but it was indistinguishable. It's hard to understand. But the sin, the law marks out this clearly defined boundary. You know, it's like if you had to tell a lie to save the life of your mother, you know, would that be wrong? Well, yes, it's wrong because is the sin characteristic, sin character, is being shown on or illuminated by means of the good thing, that's the law, especially while it's, or when it's accomplishing its work of sin leading to death. Keep going. So then I have another henna clause here. So first one was probably results. This one probably I lean towards purpose, but they're providing results ongoing from that main verb. So I'm right now at the last clause in verse 13. So that through the commandment, the sin would become utterly sinful. Sin nature would become utterly sinful. So again, with the purpose, this is all going on, the law illuminating the sin nature, the sin. Again, we have sin nature here as the subject of this last clause. We'll back up and look at these one more time, but I just want to chop through them. It's not, sometimes the numeric standard follows along word for word quite well. This particular verse is not close at all, and that's probably what makes it. So the sin nature here is would become, has become, definitely passive, because of being marked out by this good thing, the law. And it tells how it's marked out. Utterly sinful, the word for utterly, utterly is beyond throwing. It's a superlative. It means overwhelmingly or utterly. You know, beyond everything, beyond farther than I can throw the ball is a literal example. Is the degree to which sin is going to be marked out, the sin character is going to be marked out. In other words, the effect of the law is when you get done, you know there's nothing good at all with the sin nature. It's utterly full of sin. And that's the point. There's nothing that you can reform. There's nothing you can bring back. It's not a little bit good, a little bit bad. Sin nature is just utterly sinful in its desires and goals. And by means of the commandment again. So the law is marking out the boundaries of what is right and wrong. The sin nature is, of course, launching off from that point and rebelling because of the law. And because of that reaction, you see exactly how wrong it is, the sin is, how utterly sinful the sin nature is. It never gets better. It's always leading to death and sin. Let's just do 14, and then I'll back up some through that one more time. 14 again begins with a flag for, to further explain what I just said, because it's kind of hard to understand it, I know. There are, of course. We know Poeta, so we know something fully and completely. Normally when we see that, it connotes Paul writing and saying, well, you folks really all know this. Says we know that the law is spiritual. Now we have to think about that a minute because we're thinking, no, the spirit is spiritual. The law is the external thing based on letters and performance. But that's not what he says here as we go along. So his false point of view is that you believers know that the law is spiritual. In other words, it comes from God. It is revealed by the Spirit of God. Spiritual in nature. We know what? We know that the law exists spiritual. It's the same word we have when we talk about spiritual and carnal, characterized by the flesh, characterized by the spirit. So the law is an entity that is characterized by the spirit. It lines up with what we followed in verse 7-6, where he said, but now we have been released from the law, having died to that which we were bound, so that we serve in the newness of spirit and not in the oldness of letter. Well, letter didn't mean the law. and where the connections lie, especially the first one, that big therefore, kind of sets the stage about the good thing, because did it become a cause of death in me? No, it was rather the sin nature. Again, consequently, building upon the previous context there, I don't like that. Doesn't do much for me. Question, Bonnie, because it looked like you. Okay. It's just choppy. It's one of those verses where the New American Standard doesn't line up very well, word for word of the Greek. And so when you come back through and kind of reorder it, it seems confusing. But I think it's very straightforward to what we're saying here. It is somewhat of a reiteration. I would agree with that. Let me get back here again. Okay. Shouldn't have tried to stop that. Few observations, step back to what we're, you know, in this whole total section, it's pretty clear that law is a teacher. Yes. Came to that conclusion early on in verse 7, because I would action. I don't think it's anything that's going to be extremely difficult. A difficult verse was over here, I think, when we put down anchors in verse 9, and said, I was once alive apart from law. Once we define that point, what Paul's talking about, the rest of it, I think, flows out of that. So 9 was the hardest. I think the rest was just a move within that same understanding that was developed and just kind of be a gradual rolling out of those ideas. Okay. We have time this morning. I think we'll take time to do the cup and the bread. We haven't done that for a little bit. You turn over with me. 1 Corinthians 11. We'll take a little bit of time with that. Most clearly of all places in the New Testament, this particular memory that the Lord would like us to partake in until He returns has significance both for our, in all respects, our memory, but in our memory of what He's done for us on the cross, to bring to mind, take a moment to think about those things that He achieved. While we weren't here yet, we were 2,000 years down the road. If we think about it, how would I act for somebody that's going to live 2,000 years down the road? You know, it's inconceivable. Only God would do this. And of course, that's what He did. He thought ahead through all eternity for our benefit. And also to do this, to remember that He could come again at any time. He will come again. Suddenly, of course, and it could be tomorrow. We might not be going to work tomorrow. It could be suddenly, and we want to look forward to that time when we would see Him face to face. So that's the whole point of the cup and the bread. We sometimes call it, I think, wrongly, communion, because communion is to commune with somebody, to have a relationship, to talk, to have a... that's prayer, where we talk to Him. Talking God through His Word, that's communion. This is something that is specifically called cup and bread, not the wine, not the blood and the body, but the cup and the bread. Let me read through that passage, and we'll get started in a minute. No hurry. The Lord's Supper, verse 17 of chapter 11. But in giving this instruction, I do not praise you because you come together not for the better, but for the worse. They were coming together because it was good eats, and so they had lost track of why they were there, for the remembrance of His body, and to think about the fact that He might be there before they pick up the fork at the meal. They were coming there to get, they were coming there to pig out. So the Corinthians get a word of rebuke here from Paul. But in the first place, when you come together as a church, I hear that divisions exist among you, and in part I believe it. For there must also be factions among you, so that those who are approved may become evident among you. Therefore, when you meet together, it is not to eat the Lord's Supper, for in your eating, each one takes his own supper first, and one is hungry and another is drunk. What, in other words, the priorities are all messed up, of course. Do you not have houses or homes in which to eat and drink? Do you despise the church of God and shame those who have nothing? What shall I say to you? Shall I praise you? In this I will not praise you. For I receive, I would expect personally from the Lord Jesus Christ, that which I also delivered to you. So the same thing that He told me I'm going to give to you. That the Lord Jesus, in the night in which He was betrayed, took bread. And when He had given thanks, He broke it and said, this is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And so the bread is sourdough, the bread is crackers, it doesn't matter. It's the whole point of the symbology of taking this to remember Him. It's the whole point of it. In the same way, He took the cup also after supper and said, this cup by him.
Thank you.
before you, do this in remembrance of me. In the same way, he took the cup after supper, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me, or as often as